Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking about driving and driving safely today with our guest, Sergeant Jamie Lebrecht, with us. He is the Division Video Camera Coordinator and Division Speed Enforcement Coordinator with the Wisconsin State Patrol. He's been a member of the Wisconsin State Patrol for about 11 years now and knows a whole lot, as I'm learning as I've talked to him before the show started. So, questions for him about driving rules. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Already have a caller, Marie in Milwaukee, ready to join in, and we'll get to Marie. We'll get to you in just a minute or two here. What about you? 1-800-642-1234. And tell you what, Sergeant Jamie Lebrecht, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me today, Larry.
Well, it's always great to have somebody from the State Patrol. Just in the way of background, as you think about the Wisconsin State Patrol, what are the overall responsibilities of that organization?
Well, for our organization, the big responsibility that we have is just public safety, especially out on the roadways. So a couple of our things that we really concentrate on in our division is speeding, making sure that people are wearing seatbelts and trying to reduce the amount of people driving under the influence of alcohol or, other substance abuses.
Yeah, Jill Nadeau was telling me that the patrol is celebrating 75 years.
Yeah, we've been around for a little while now. So,
have the responsibilities changed much over the years? Are those general responsibilities the ones you've always had?
I think those general responsibilities have been there since the start. That's kind of our foundation. But since we've started, 75 years ago, we've definitely expanded in our realm in law enforcement, as law enforcement has in general.
And I imagine you folks have been pretty busy the last week or so, maybe more than normal with the weather we've had.
Yeah, with the cold weather and the winter storm that we had this week, we've definitely seen an uptick in call volumes out on the interstate and out on the roadways. Just for an example, the last 24 hours in our Southwest region area, we had over 300 calls of service. 90% of those were motorist assists, whether they were cars, trucks, or semis that had broken down because, they stopped working out on the roadway.
In the cold, cold conditions. Well, I know I mentioned one thing before we go to the phones. I mentioned at the start of the show something about snowplows. Looks like we might be getting some more snow and possibly rain later, but snow first. You got to be careful out there when you've got a snowplow either coming at you or one that you're overtaking.
Right, yes. And that's kind of our law of the month. It looked like it's kind of come back into December. It's this being wintertime, it's kind of an important one, and one we like to rehash every year with people, is that most collisions between snowplows and vehicles usually happen from the rear. It's a rear-end collision. It's usually the drivers driving too fast for conditions is not able to slow enough once they reach that snowplow. So just a reminder to everybody, as you're driving out there and you happen to see a snowplow, you have to be at least 200 feet behind a snowplow. That's actually a state law. And that kind of stems with the amount of snow and whiteout conditions that a snowplow can produce when they're trying to clear those roadways to make it safe for people to drive on.
Can you pass a snowplow?
You can, but you want to make sure that you do it in a safe manner, all right? And you also got to pay attention. They've got those side wings, blades that they have, so you want to make sure that you don't get too close to those snowplows when you are passing them.
But you begin your pass at least 200 feet behind, not right up to the bumper.
Right. It would be better that way, because then you can actually see, what's behind you, especially on a four-lane highway. The snowplow is usually in the right lane, clearing that one first before they do the left lane. And if you're passing in the left lane, you're probably passing the snowplow in untreated roads. So that's something to also be careful about.
Well, we have callers online with questions. I mentioned Marie. Let's go to Marie in Milwaukee. Marie, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Larry and Jamie. Okay, this is my biggest fear of driving. I'm driving on the interstate in the right-hand lane, and someone either hits me or I slide off a steep embankment and a hill. how is the best way to control my vehicle?
All right. Thanks, Marie. That one is a tough one. When you get hit from behind like that, it all depends on what direction that rear end actually starts going on your vehicle. The best thing to probably do is just try not to panic and overcorrect the steering wheel, because if you hit the alignment on your rear axle too far off, I believe it's 22 degrees, you'll lose complete control. And by snapping the wheel either to the left or to the right could actually cause that, and that'll cause you to end up doing a spin out and probably end up into, you know, the right ditch or the median area.
It's not a fun thing to... I actually was following somebody on the interstate one time, a young woman, and I noticed her car, it was winter, and the car was kind of, well, it was not keeping a straight line, let's put it that way. And I thought, well, either this person is impaired somehow or tired. And she went off, and she went off over a steep embankment and able to stop and render some help. And it was luckily for her, there was enough snow that the car didn't roll over. But it was, she fell asleep, fell asleep at the wheel. And I don't think she even realized anything about turning the steering wheel until she was halfway down this kind of steep embankment. So, Marie, I've seen it actually happen.
Really?
Yeah, I was right behind her. And
oh, my gosh.
And so, able to stop and help, call 911 and get, you know, people out there to help her out. But
my one question is, should you brake in that situation, or would that not be a good idea to try to stop your propulsion from going so quickly down the hill? Should you brake?
If you're going nose first,
Yeah, it's really going to depend, because what you have is your traction. Let's count it 100 pennies, right? So now if we're using, let's say, 30 of those pennies to do our steering, right? So now we got 70 pennies left. What are we going to use those pennies for, right? We get hit end from the back. Now we've got tire traction. If you apply brakes, you're taking some of those pennies away from, let's say, tire traction. To try to slow yourself down. So if you apply too much brakes, that could also cause, you know, ABS to lock up or something like that. The type of collision with a rear end too could depend. If it's extensive rear end damage, your brakes aren't going to really work, you know, type of deal. All this happens within a few seconds. So it's kind of what you react to. And before you know it, you're stopped at, you know, the edge of a snowbank or something like that going, okay, what just happened? Am I okay? Kind of thing.
Yeah. There you go, Marie. Just drive carefully, and hopefully that's not going to happen to you. I appreciate your call very much. Mike in Brookfield has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. My question is, I drive professionally for a living, and I would just like to know if when you're in a storm and your wipers, or you're using your wipers to see, by law, do your lights need to be on your vehicle? I see so many people driving, you know, in terrible rain or snow with no lights on. I was just wondering if there's actually something on the books that if your wiper's operating, that your lights should be on.
All right. Yeah, thanks. That's an excellent question. We've kind of always been talking to people throughout, I think, all the years that, you know, if you do have your wipers on, you know, turn your lights on. I think even in, you know, driving school, I believe they kind of teach that as well. That if, you know, it's reduced visibility. The state requirement is that, you know, when you do have reduced visibility, that you need to have your lights on. So
So it is a law.
I don't know if it's specific. I don't recall if it specifically addresses the wipers. But when you do have reduced visibility, less than 500 feet, you know, in foggy conditions, snow conditions, whiteouts and stuff like that, it's always best. Even if you have your wipers on, it's usually because it's raining or something like that, you get reflection, or it's because it's snowing. Best practice is to turn on your lights so that not only your headlights are on, you know, if you have a vehicle that runs with daytime lights, but now if you turn your lights on and not just use the auto mode, then you can make sure that your rear taillights are also on so that somebody that might be going faster than you are at least sees you and can react sooner so you don't get that rear end collision like Marie was talking about.
So switch to the light. If you've got, like I've got, an automatic light situation, switch to lights on, and then the rear lights come on.
Correct.
Well, see, you know, there's something I didn't realize. And always remember to turn back to auto when you get home, because otherwise you'll wind up like me and thinking that the lights are going to automatically turn off, and they don't overnight, and then you've got a dead battery in the morning. Mike, thanks a lot for calling. That happened to me once. It was only once, though. John in Oshkosh will give you a chance now. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a question about the legality of, you know, getting on the freeway. Often I find myself behind cars, semis that are covered with snow. Especially with semis, you know, there's snow and ice flying off, hitting my vehicle and basically causing a whiteout on the freeway. Is that legal for people to drive that way?
All right. Thanks for the call, John. We actually get this probably more often than you think. And the snow and ice that you're probably referring to is what's on the top of the trailer. There's no way for semi drivers, you know, companies and stuff like that to really get on top of a trailer like that. A lot of these trucks are usually stopped in a rest area for the night during storms and stuff like that. So it's an unfortunate thing that we just have to deal with as a motoring public, dealing with the snow and ice off the semi trailers like that. So that's just kind of something to keep in mind that, you know, and usually you can kind of see it. See the wind starting to blow the snow a little bit. It's just kind of something to keep in mind that, you know, for one, you know, you don't want to follow too close to semi trucks because they do have a huge blind spot to the rear of them. So you want it just like snow plows. You want to stay a good distance back so that they can see you. Basically, a good rule of thumb is if you can't see their side view mirrors, you're probably too close.
Oh, so watch that. So a couple hundred feet, probably like with the snow plow.
You're right.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, if you have a question or comment for us as we visit with our guest today, Sergeant Jamie LeBrec of the Wisconsin State Patrol. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Greg in Mineral Point. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I got a question on CDL requirements as far as pickup and stock trailers.
CDL. I'm not sure what CDL stands for.
Commercial driver's license.
Gotcha. Okay. Sergeant Jamie.
All right, Greg. That is a good question. With trucks and basically cattle haulers and stuff like that, I think some of it does depend on the use that trailer is being used for. You know, is this a commercial or is this more of a farm person that's, you know, carrying their livestock around? So I do have a phone number for you. It's a good one to use for, I guess, anybody out there that has questions in Wisconsin about motor carrier laws or the motor carrier community altogether. And that number is 608-267-9762. Again, that's 608-267-9762. That's where you can call people and you leave a message, they'll give you a call back. I think it's usually within 24 hours and they'll provide you that answer. So it's a good resource to have.
Yeah. So, and there's, so you're saying that there's a difference if you're an over the road guy or gal who's transporting things from one state to the other versus, let's say, the farmer who lives in Cottage Grove area and is driving to Madison or some other area close by.
Right. Yeah. With commercial motor vehicles and the farms, there's a lot of exemptions. It all depends on the type of configuration you have, the length, the width, how much it actually weighs altogether, and what it's being used for. So.
All right, so that number was 608-267-9762. That's the number. Greg, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go. Well, I'll tell you what. Before we go anywhere, I want to remind you, Sergeant Jamie LeBrec, our guest today from the Wisconsin State Patrol. Jane Rotunda, our on-air producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And I'm Larry Mueller, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking safe driving and answering driving questions today with our guest, Sergeant Jamie LeBrack from the Wisconsin State Patrol. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks again for joining us. You can email us, by the way, at ideas@wpr.org or phone 1-800-642-1234. Sarah in Zion, Illinois has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Well, I have another driving out or western story. I was driving over the Cascade Mountains one winter on the way back to Illinois, and so my question is, like, how could I have avoided this? Well, I don't know. I suppose just not driving. But there was no snow on the road, but I had in my, you know, I was thinking there might be black ice, but I was trying to drive slow, but I obviously was not driving slow enough, and I just suddenly going downhill. I hit the ice and just started flying down the hill and absolutely no control. Would have gone right over that cliff down this edge of the mountain, except that there was a guardrail that stopped me, and I never knew how strong those guardrails were. Completely stopped me and no damage. But I just wanted, I mean, black ice is nothing to be, to like pretend isn't there. It's really scary.
Yeah, that is for sure. Jamie, comment?
Yeah, so black ice is definitely hard to see, for one. One thing you can do, you know, when driving, kind of look at the weather for that day. You know, if it's below, you know, freezing temperatures, below 32 degrees, there's a, you know, a better chance for, you know, ice or black ice to be formed on the roadway. It's especially true on the travel lanes themselves because, you know, if snow gets compacted, that turns into ice, or the natural tire tracks that the public is taking, those tire tracks will usually be a little bit more slippier because it's always compacted by every single car that's going on it, so it does create potential black ice. One thing you can do in the state of Wisconsin is go to 511wi.gov, that's 511wi.gov, and that is our travel information system, so you can get information before you head out the door for the day on how roadway conditions are.
So it's 511.wi.gov?
511.
511, sorry, 511.wi.gov. You know, here's the circumstance. I was driving on Interstate 90 North once, and one of those situations or one of those kind of days where you could have black ice, and I was going up a hill, and a semi was in two lanes, you know, in the other lane proceeding south, and that semi driver blinked his lights on and off, on and off, on and off. And so I slowed down right away, and I got to the top of the hill, and just over the hill, there was an accident. And it was black ice. And I was, because I was had slowed down even more than I was driving, I was able to get around that accident, not plow into the truck that was across my lane of traffic. And I always appreciated that semi driver who probably saved me a collision. So that was kind of quite a good reminder. Thank you very much for that call, Aaron in West Bend. Your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, I am a semi driver, and I'd like to question regarding something that's difficult most times. And gets a little more difficult here when there's snow covering both sides of the roads and the center medians and things of the such. Could you please go over the basics of roundabout usage? I constantly get cut off when I'm trying to turn, you know, a 48-foot trailer around roundabouts mm-hmm. by people who think that they could just sneak around me on the outside.
Yeah, excellent question, Aaron. Yes, on roundabouts, when a semi enters a roundabout, actually they have the right of way. So whether it's a single roundabout or a double lane roundabout, semi trucks in general, they take wider turns. I think we all can agree and know that. So in roundabouts, they need those two lanes. In a single lane, the middle area is usually flattened down. That's for a reason. That's to allow the semi-trailers to be able to cross onto those a little bit so that they can actually make it through the roundabout. On the double lanes like that, usually they've got some flowers and some nice decoration in the middle. Well, that's because the semi-trucks can use those two lanes. So if you do come up upon a semi-truck in the roundabout, don't try to pass them. You have to actually yield to them because they're going to use up both lanes to make it through that roundabout. So don't try to sneak through on the left or the right side, because what's going to end up happening is you're going to end up getting into a crash, and then you'll unfortunately end up getting a ticket as the pedestrian car because you failed to yield the right of way to that semi driver in that roundabout.
And there are some roundabouts too when they're double lane. There, if you're in one, maybe let's say the outside lane, that is to be a right turn only lane, and yet people will not turn right and just kind of go around and try and get back in, and that is not legal.
Right. Yep. I mean, you always want to pay attention to the signs that are, you know, posted before you enter the roundabout, and they're also usually painted on the roadway themselves. If you unfortunately make the mistake of you wanted to go straight but you're in a right turn lane, well, make that right turn, find a safe way to reroute yourself so you can get back onto the way that you wanted to go.
And Aaron, thanks again for calling. Let's go to Mike in Oak Creek next. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I wish Aaron was still on the phone, because I'd love to address this with him. So my question has to do with regulating semi-truck drivers. And this seems to be a fairly common occurrence, where the weather is treacherous. You're on the interstate. Most everyone's driving, you know, below the speed limit, keeping it safe. You can't even see the lines in the road. And, of course, here comes the semi-truck driver blasting past everyone, whiting out everything. This is not the snow coming off the top of the truck. No, this is just him going too fast for the conditions and making it dangerous for everyone else. Are there regulations that cover that kind of a situation?
All right, thanks, Mike, for that question. There's not specifically any regulations that deal with it. When we're talking about driving too fast for conditions, you know, that's talking about, you know, are you able to keep control of the vehicle, you know, during hazardous situations, whether it's, you know, too much rain, snow, stuff like that, dirt driving during fog and everything like that. I do understand your frustration with that. Usually you do see semi-drivers driving faster in snowier conditions than cars and stuff like that. I'm not sure, I guess, what the belief is by the semi-driver, because, you know, it does take them longer to stop. They do weigh more, so it's maybe a little bit easier for their tires to actually grab traction and stuff like that on the snow versus cars, where, you know, your weight and ability to grab traction on the roadway is a lot less. So I'm sure that probably plays into it a little bit.
Yeah. I've also had car drivers go right by and under those circumstances and too, and throw just as, not maybe not quite as much, but throw a lot of junk your way as they go by. So it's probably something that drivers other than semi drivers also do. So just to make that comment, Mike, thank you. So it's in other words, whoever it is, if you're driving too fast for existing conditions, you can get a ticket.
Correct. Yep.
All right, there we go. Thank you. Fred in Sherwood, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Frequently, you see open-top truck, whatever, dirt, salt, rack, with no tarp over the cargo, dump out the stuff. And I don't mean deliberately that they're putting the salt down. I mean they're spreading it off the top from the wind, from the motion of the truck. And then to put icing on it, they'll have it stenciled on the back of their truck. Not responsible.
All right. Hey, I like that. Not responsible. Unfortunately, Fred, they are responsible. That's actually failure to secure load is what that would actually fall underneath. And yeah, I know what you're talking about, the dump trucks and all that. And if you ever look on any of those dump trucks, you always see they have usually the cover tunnels that they can put over. And probably for their ease, they never put those covers on because it takes some time, you know, takes money away from them or something. But yes, they are required to secure that load by putting those covers on so that they don't get the sand, the dirt, the gravel flying out of that truck like that. Because, yeah, it does cause damage, and we do get calls on occasion, you know, from people that were behind, you know, such a dump truck and rock flew out, hit the windshield, now the windshield's all cracked, you know, kind of thing. So we end up dealing with Motor Public that way. But as far as notifying people, it all depends on, you know, where you are. If whatever county you're in, you know, call that sheriff's department and let them know. If they've got somebody in the area, they'll, you know, they'll take enforcement on it. If we happen to be out on the interstate or something like that, where, you know, State Patrol happens to frequent that roadway to respond to things, then, you know, call the State Patrol up. And if we got somebody in the area that we can educate that truck driver on, we'll do that.
Is there a, I don't know, what you call it, a 911, sort of a general type of phone number for the State Patrol?
There is not. It all depends really on what county you're in, because that depends on what district that you're in, because State Patrol actually has seven districts, seven different headquarters, and depending on the county depends on where that call would fall into.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, Fred. Appreciate it. Brad in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, Brad.
Hello. Hey, I wanted to talk about navigation systems as a way to warn one another about hazards. You know, Google owns an alternative navigation system called Waze. That's spelled W-A-Z-E, and it's crowdsourced. So we can very easily and quickly warn each other about things like black ice or floodwaters on a road or a roadkill blocking a lane. I had that one happen once. Waze is a wonderful way for people to let other people know that there's a hazard.
Okay. So what do you think?
Hey, I love it. You know, the world of technology that we're in right now and the apps and stuff that you can get on the phones and the apps that people are creating, you know, every single day, some of that stuff could be definitely helpful. You know, besides this Waze, I'm sure there's probably 10 other ones at least, you know, of different apps that you could use that could help warn people. So, yeah, I'm all for that.
The one thing is, if you're texting yourself onto Waze...
Right, yeah.
You better not be driving.
Make sure you got a passenger with you if you're doing that, because it is illegal to text and drive in the state of Wisconsin, pretty much every state, you know, now. And it's a big thing that we're dealing with in Wisconsin is distracted driving. And a lot of it's usually dealing with people on their phones, whether they're texting, surfing on the internet. They're trying to do more than what they should do. Their focus should be just driving their vehicle so that they can get from point A to point B safely. And then after that, you know, go ahead and Snapchat, Twitter, do all that stuff that you want to do then.
One of the irritations for me is coming to a stop light and there's a car ahead of me and the light changes to green and the car doesn't go and you look into the window and the person's reading their text messages and not paying any attention to the lights.
Yep, and that's actually perfectly legal for them to do. As long as they're stopped, Wow. they can use the phone. But, you know, when they're physically driving the vehicle, then they can't.
I wish they'd pay attention, though, to the lights.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on the light, everybody. Oh, man. John in New Berlin, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I don't drive, but I see a lot of people driving around with snowed over plates or license plate lights that don't work. I can pay a month's bill with what I see for life.
So, snow-covered plates or snow-covered lights?
Yep. So, for the snow-covered plates, right? Okay, so both of these have state statute laws that are enforced. As you can probably see, especially during winter storms and stuff like that, the day of a winter storm, you're probably going to see a lot of covered license plate, right? You can't just clear those off very easily. The day after, it all depends on where the people are driving, you know, on how the roadways are. Are they nicely cleared now, or is there still snow on there so that, you know, the back of the car is getting covered in snow on that? But yeah, it is a requirement. So when you are, you know, brushing off your car for the day, make sure you brush off, you know, your taillights, your headlights, and the license plate as well.
All right, there we go. Good point, John. Thank you for calling. Mike in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yes, I don't know if the officer has knowledge of this or not, but I've finally gotten myself a dash cam, actually a couple of them, because of all the lunatics on the road. And I'm wondering if it's necessary, if you are in a collision or if you witness a collision, if the time and date stamp on the dash cam be correct, because the particular model I have has like 2015 and you can't change it.
Oh.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thanks for the question, Mike. The time stamp, whether it's the time or the date, it is important, especially if you happen to have to go to court or something like that on something. But it can be explained. All right. It's not uncommon for, you know, a time stamp to be off by maybe a couple of seconds. It's usually uncommon for a couple of minutes, and it kind of depends on most of these dash cams usually use whether you can adjust it yourself or they'll use GPS to provide its geolocation, and it kind of provides the time date stamp based on that geolocation. So it all depends on the type of product you have. I guess my recommendation would be to look at the owner's manual on it to see what kind of information it provides and, you know, what kind of variance it might have. It could say right in there that it could be up to, you know, it's normal for it to be a 3-second delay on the video.
There you go. Thanks so much, Mike, for calling. Chuck emailed a question to us and wonders, are the yellow speed limit signs, so the yellow signs you see, are they on curves, let's say, that say, you know, yellow sign, you might come and say 45 miles an hour or whatever. Are they a suggestion, or can you be ticketed for exceeding the yellow speed limit sign if they are the lawful speed limit for a curve? How does one know exactly where the reduced speed limit applies?
All right. Yeah, thanks for the question, Chuck. To answer that, I guess you could say it is a suggestion. All right. It's not something that can be enforced on a curve or something like that. If you do happen to go off the roadway, which we see a lot of single vehicle crashes, especially motorcycles, is they're going too fast for that curve. So those speed limits are advisories based on the how the road's manufactured and stuff like that for it to be able to safely take it. And I say do this one time. If you're on a backcountry road and you see coming up to a curve that says 45 miles an hour, slow down to 45 miles an hour once to take the curve. It's going to feel a little slow, but the amount of reaction time you have for something, especially if it's a blind curve, is absolutely amazing versus trying to take it at, you know, normal highway speeds of, let's say, 55.
And I know coming off the interstate from Milwaukee to Madison, as you're entering Madison, there's a yellow sign, and you're coming from 70 mile an hour speed limit, and there's a yellow sign that says 55, and then not long after, there's a white sign that says 55. And so when I see that yellow sign, that's when I make sure I start slowing down so that I'm at 55 when I hit the white sign. That's probably, is that the way to do it?
Yeah, it's a good way, because that posted sign's there to let the motoring public know that, especially in a curve or something like that, is, hey, normal highway speed, it's not advised to take it at that, you know, take that curve at that speed. Here's the suggested speed that you should go at so that you can safely navigate through it, and that'll also help you if there happens to be a hazard within that curve, that you'll be able to react to it efficiently.
Sue emailed to say a short while ago she could see a speed gun sticking out of the windows on patrol cars. Now when we drive by a patrol car, the officer head is looking down, not even out the window. Is the person looking at a laptop? Or what information are you getting off the computer? The speed, the license number, what are you getting?
So that scenario would be hard to try to explain on that one. But what I can tell you, or tell Sue on that one, is that speed guns sticking out of the window are usually our lasers that we're using. But with the advancement of technology, you can do stuff without having to have windows rolled down. You know, and it all depends on weather condition and stuff too, right? No one mm-hmm. likes to be cold. No one likes to get eaten alive by mosquitoes in the summertime once we finally get there, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what they're doing in the vehicle, yeah, they could be looking at the laptop. They could be doing reports, you know, especially for our department in the State Patrol. Our vehicles are our office. We do everything in there. We write our reports and stuff in there. We do all the different enforcement stuff like that. So there's a number of things that they could be doing.
All right, there we go. Let's go to Dan in Wausau next. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. No real questions, just a couple of tips for people with the onset of the upcoming warm weather that's supposed to hit with the rain. Just if the traveling public needs to realize that with this cold and the amount of frost in the road, that underneath the overheads on the four lanes, any shaded areas, they're going to ice first. So if you're traveling down the road and it looks wet, just pay attention to what's going on by those overheads and don't drive with your cruise control on, because I worked for a county highway department for a lot of years and plowed out in the four lane, and you'll see people where all of a sudden they'll lose it underneath the overhead bridges because it ices first. And another plow driver's trick, when you were out and it was the temperature was getting close to 32 and you would get rain and you were trying to figure out what was going on, if you reach out and touch the back of your mirror, and if it's starting to make ice on there and then the road's untreated, you're going to pretty much have ice on the roadway even though you can't tell it.
Yeah. There you go. A couple of good tips.
Yeah, I like it. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Those are good points. Appreciate your call. And one more call. James in De Pere. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jamie. I have a question on, you mentioned the dump trucks and open trucks not putting their canvas over the top there. My question is, I drive behind a lot of these, and are they required to have mud flaps on the back? Some do, some don't. I've talked to one guy who said, well, we get bulldozers pushing us out of dumps and things like that, so we don't put them on. But I've lost a couple of windshields that way, just being behind them, and I'm wondering if that's legal to have those back wheels spinning right at the back there, shooting stones. Is that something they
yeah,
should?
Yeah, without mud flaps, you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So they should have mud flaps on. That vehicle probably did when it first came out brand new, and yeah, between bulldozer and stuff like that, they probably got ripped off, and the driver of the company never replaced it, which is, you know, kind of shame on them, because they are required, it is a state law that they have to have those mud flaps.
And gravel trucks as well?
Yep, anything like that. Especially get the heights like that where it's up so high and there's no actual fender that's blocking it.
Yeah.
To be able to block the stones from being kicked up and stuff like that, they have to have those fenders.
Because another listener had wondered, why isn't it illegal for gravel trucks to have mud flaps? And they should have them.
Yep, they should have them on.
Well, you know what? We have gone through a whole pile of questions here, Jamie, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. I think we could have probably been doing this all afternoon for the number of calls we've had. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. We'd love to have you again.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, sir.
Thank you so much. Sergeant Jamie Labrack, a Division Video Camera Coordinator and Division Speed Enforcement Coordinator with the Wisconsin State Patrol. I learned some things today, and I bet you did as well. Hope you did. And speaking of learning, we're going to learn some more things and talk about our wetlands here in Wisconsin. There's a wetland conference coming up, and so we've got a couple of guests to talk about that next here on the Ideas Network.